wanted to protect Westmoreland, because at that moment, Krulak was not going to be the chief of, you know, pacification guy that he was going to become. And to protect Westmoreland, he ordered the briefing canceled, and Van was told to leave. Yeah. That is, he had his briefing stuff there in the ante room. Yeah. They told him to leave. Well, wait a minute. If he knew he couldn't be promoted, so he gave it all up, what was he doing in that ante room when his briefing was canceled? And there's that. And the other thing is, if you've ever read Bright and Shining Lie, just about 90% of that book, Bright and Shining Lie, is in Halberstam's The Best and the Brightest. Because the two of them did everything together. Okay. So all the interviews with Van are joint, but it's verbatim. It's literally verbatim from Bright and Shining Lie. And if you look at that book, it's got something like 400 pages, and only about 50 are actually about Vietnam. Yeah. The rest of them are about this early life that Sheehan researched. But all the stuff that is about Vietnam, half of that is what Halberstam has already written. That is the Battle of Op Bach.
That's all
there. But I mean, it's still valuable, but what's frightening is how popular it is as a book. And also, I've heard people in I Corps who said that he did not function as chief of staff in the way Sheehan portrays him.
Oh, really?
And that's news to me, but the people who say that are people, of course you could say maybe they didn't like Van and that's why they're saying it, but they're people who theoretically should have known.
Yeah.
And, you know, that he called in all the arc-like strikes that stopped and all that other stuff. And I prefer to think it's true for maybe the same reason that Sheehan does, which is here's a guy who believed that the Vietnamese had to win the war themselves. And in the end, the biggest victory in the war was won by Americans with the chief of staff doing all the work for the Vietnamese generals, the opposite of what he was there for. And that's such a neat paradigm for the war. I'm sure everyone would say, oh, that's great. But I'm worried about the rest of it. And I also have a personal gravamen. I wanted him to help me reach someone who he knows. And he said, just write my office or whatever. And he never responded to phone calls, faxes, or something else. And I guess when you think you're that important, you get little historians like me who get very on
Listen, you're right on. I really, when I came back to the States to talk to Anna, they gave me, from his reassurance, actually he helped me come back to the States. He helped me to acclimatize as best as I was going to do for a while. Mm-hmm. But then I went to see Sandra's family before Dave Dellinger's reassurances made me.
Those with power should exercise it in the most benign and constructive way.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's the lesson for me. Mm-hmm.
When I was talking to Tom Amiano, we got down to the end of his interview, and started reflecting on being gay in Vietnam. And he said he made a point of he never slept with any Americans. He said that would be a betrayal of his duty. He said that the really macho MPs always came on to him. He said.
Oh,
and he was telling a story of one MP in particular when we ran out of, the tape went click. And I said, maybe that's just as well that we don't get the details, you know. But I'm interested in gender. And I'm when I started this phase of the interviews, because I knew I was going to get to talk to a lot of women, that it would be a good idea to start asking questions about what was it like to be a woman in IVS. Mm-hmm. And secondarily, I think it'd be, as you say, I think because of that, you got closer than you might have. You mentioned that earlier. I'd like to finish up talking a little bit about that. What was it like to be a woman in IVS?
With him, the guys that I went over with, that there were 15 of us, and we were very close. And I don't think it made any difference to anybody in that particular group. Leadership was a little bit chauvinist, but I had to be. And so it was fine.
And, you know, it seems like a lot of the IVS administration was well-intentioned, slow to respond to criticism or the need for constructive change, but then did the right thing. Does that sound about right?
I will not fault IVS leadership. Mm-hmm. I feel they did an extraordinary job. part of my making peace with this whole business has been a lot of writing. People are interested in it. When I started really zeroing in on the training we received, the expectations of how we would function in Vietnam, the level of support that we got, they could not have done better. And if they had done better, they would have done a disservice because they would have been nannies, and
we were
very strong, independent people, and very diverse life outlooks. But everybody was just really wanted autonomy. And to exercise their own individual outlook, and we wanted to be pointed in the right direction, but we didn't want anybody telling us what we had to do. And IBS was just
super. Yes, I mean, given the people they recruited, if there had been any more administration, it would have been counterproductive.
Disaster. Yeah. And when I think back on the kinds of people like that, my two dearest friends in life, and considering the fact that I'm gay and I'm a sober alcoholic, my two dearest friends are June and Billy Lee. And because we've gone through, you know, we know where we're coming from, and we know what we had to go through to get to where we are now. Besides some of the really jerky guys that Not administration, but volunteers for the most part. CIA.
That was your feeling that he was?
Oh, everybody. That's
everyone right. Thought he was CIA.
Oh, yeah.
What was he doing in IBS, or what was
God
he?
I don't know. CIA, he was our mole, or whatever, I don't know.
Well, there would have had to have been one. If there wasn't, someone would have had to invent him.
Yeah, yes. Well, which may well be. Uh-huh. I really don't know.
Did you ever read anything by John Balaban?
Ah, don't get me on John Balaban.
Because I'm getting you on John Balaban.
I finally made peace with him.
Oh, good.
Well, totally within me. He doesn't know anything about it.
Yes, okay. What was the lack of peace?
Oh, he's a prick.
Uh-huh.
And who also happens to be a very gifted poet, and I write poetry, part of it's a I really don't want this on tape because I don't want to admit to. The first time I really understood what my writing skills could do for me was when I was trying to figure out what he had come to stand for, because he was also a sober alcoholic and just a cancer. A lot of our guys, died.
When was
Steve
that?
Earhart, just recently, a couple of years ago. Steve Earhart. Guys die young. Hugh Swift.
Yeah.
And I just wrote and wrote and wrote until I finally got what Rick meant to me. And they put it in the IBS newsletter, and people were calling me, and I got all kinds of stuff. John Balaban calls and he says, "How did Rick die? You know, not a this or a that, or not a oh that was such a nice piece, or you know."
He's brusque.
He's a prick. And I really, because I knew that, you know, that he's a well-known poet, and I get my Poet and Writers magazine, and I see, you know, Balaban this and Balaban that, and I really wanted him to say, "Oh, that was nice."
No. But he works very hard. He does very good.
Oh,
work.
I know. And his book was really good, and it was wonderful.
You mean Remembering Heaven's Face?
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you ever read his novels?
No, I'm not. I've just come to this.
Yes, you've just come to this place.
I've seen his poetry in a couple of anthologies, and I'm just beginning to.
Were you included in one of those anthologies?
No.
An early one?
Not at all. I've only been writing since I've been disabled for 5 years. Yeah, well, since 1990.
Was of?
A combination of post polio syndrome and then also the amino acid that mimics serotonin in the brain.
Right.
Or that actually it doesn't mimic, it increases the serotonin level in the brain. And like soul contaminated product here. Mm-hmm. They knew it was contaminated. That and
did you settle here in Washington?
Tessa's family is here. I went to in 83 refugee camp, not visiting, she's cultural orientation trainer, and she came home and said, why don't you go? And I said, no way. And then, you know, a couple of days later I said, where can do ESL? So I ended up at the Philippine Processing Refugee PR. Came back in 1985. She came with me. I was disabled in 1990, and she got. I've come camping up here. You said you're going to retire at Vashon Island.
Vashon Island. We'll have to. We have to promise ourselves to live that long.
All right.
A friend of mine lives here now. He's moving to. He's got a job at Florida State that's very promising, but looking for a place to retire. I have 15 years to retirement, mind you. But you've got to start looking now.
Oh, yeah.
But you really, what we all really need to do is have like an IVS or street where everyone's there to take care of each other, because we're all going to need it.
Yeah.
And this friend of mine, he says, if I'm going to retire somewhere, it's going to be, I'll buy a farm on Vashon Island and we'll,
you
know. And I said, well, if you do that, I'll throw in money. We'll get extra acreage so that we can all, you know.
You better do it.
Soon.
You better do it, because with Intel going in, Intel just put in a big plant.
Intel put a plant on the island?
No.
Oh, you mean over here, so there's going to be a lot of housing demand.
Yeah.
That's too bad.
And the ferry is not that, it's not that onerous.
Mm. Well, we're working on Honolulu now, because after this, everyone hates, you know, get rock fever. It's crowded, the economy's going down the toilet. Sounds perfect for me. It's the third world. I'm very comfortable there. And it also has buses with, all the buses have wheelchair assistance. So I have bad knees. I'm counting on, I want that kind of bus service when I'm older. You're talking about John, that reminded me of something. I'm glad we discussed that. That's going to add a great deal in a small way to the overall picture.
I was going to meet him. I ended up working with Don and Rick and Don and
all the names Don Luce,
Gene Stolzfus, Willie Myers,
and Willie Myers. Did you ever work for the Indochina project?
Yeah.
That we were all in. They were all in the Indochina project.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what was I going to tell you? Oh, I was. We were going to meet Dave Dellinger. We were going to have lunch with Dave Dellinger, and Martin Luther King was killed. We had an appointment all set up with Ted Kennedy, and Bobby was shocked. It was just.
Remember hearing about? Because you had left. Did you hear about David Gittleson dying?
Oh, I was there. I knew Dave.
Yeah. What'd you think of him?
Yeah. Oh, he's wonderful. Oh, he's my kind of guy. Mm-hmm. Americans. Go away, you know.
Do you have any reflections on his death? People always wonder how Peter, you know, I always look back at Peter Hunting, and I always feel that he, my understanding of the story was that he may have passed a convoy on his bike and wound up in an ambush meant for somebody else. Is that kind of your understanding?
It was definitely crossfire. They went out for him. No, they... Either the U.S. government or the Vietnamese government at the behest of the U.S. government killed. Definitely not the Vietnamese.
Why do you feel that way?
I really don't know, except I know that he was probably very potent in his presence down there, and that he articulate, very passionate young man. He would have done something to that would have kind of pulled a dramatic fashion, let the world know what was going on in his corner of the world.
his thing was the, he was trying to blow the whistle on the refugee resettlement program. Yeah. And that was my impression.
I don't really know exactly.
I think people, that could get, I'm doing a biography of an advisor who was killed under similar circumstances. And it really does appear that much money was being made off of that program in Saigon that it was just like tweaking the nose of the king, and it just couldn't be tolerated.
Yeah.
So I'm curious. But there's always, I mean, we've talked to a lot of people, and some people even have felt that they had contacts with the VC, that is, people they knew were VC.
Oh, yeah.
And there's a possibility he simply walked into a staging area for the Tet Offensive. And, you know, they knew he was ex-U.S. military. And although he was, you know, for the Vietnamese, you know,
I don't know.
Huh?
Think so.
Don't think the Vietnamese would have killed him?
I don't think so.
I mean,
the Viet
folk on the other side.
The enemy?
Yeah.
I really don't.
What about Ted Kennedy? Did you, you didn't get to meet Ted Kennedy. Because
I didn't, him, but everybody knew that, that when he came, he that time too, with John Summer being his.
There was a. Did you know about the car bomb that went off in front of the IBS house in Meetup? Kennedy was supposed to go out. Yeah, when Kennedy was just before David was killed, or about that same time. Well, it was just before Ted, and Kennedy was supposed to make a visit to Meetup. A car bomb went off. And it wasn't a car bomb. It was a what do you call it? A limpet mine underneath the, one of the.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
There was some,
I
shrapnel in the window. And,
yeah.
And there was a lot of thing that maybe that was meant for Kennedy. And I think, well, wait a minute, Kennedy was a war critic at the time. Why would the VC want to kill? But on the other hand, it's like poor Lord Mountbatten. You're pro IRA, but they kill you because you're the nearest relative of the Queen that they can kill. And it's just your bad luck.
No, I don't think,
no, don't think so. Don't think, well, that'll be. That's, we don't know anything about that anyway. It's just speculation, so to speak. That reminded me of something, though, about around, Indochina. What did you? Mm-hmm. How active were you involved in the Indochina research?
Well,
I worked. We missed
not,
that.
Not very much. Just, I don't remember, two or three months.
Two or three months.
And took returning IBSers in to see the Congress.
This raises an interesting question, which was, how instrumental or functional IVS, what kind of role did IVS play after 68 between the I guess a lot of IVSers were offered an opportunity to close their contracts too.
Mm-hmm.
You remember that?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, what happened then? Just your regulation.
No,
and then we'll go to this last issue.
No, that was starting in. Well, when Don resigned, mm-hmm. they started doing that, mm-hmm. and a lot of people just, two camps. It's too dangerous for us to be here, and mm-hmm. these people are nuts expecting aid.
Mm-hmm.
And then the others saying, it's just, you know, we have every right to be here, and we want to be here, and we feel we can still be useful.
Mm-hmm.
I'm getting tired.
We're almost done, actually. I was only going to ask you one more question, which was that, you know, there's an appearance, at least, that after 68, IVS is almost totally staffed with young people who are either learning to or are already very opposed to the American war effort in Vietnam. And they're coming back and making a significant contribution to the anti-war movement. And you mentioned one way was that they were steered towards their own congressman when they came back to the States by the Indochina Project. And was that an IVS thing? I mean, is that something that IVS should have been engaged in? That is literally functioning as a way of educating young Americans to hate the war and come back and get other Americans to hate the war. I mean, I mean, in retrospect, that seems much more, what do you call it? Organized or something than it probably was.
That's out of my purview
there.
Yeah,
but you did. How did you come up? How did you come to the point where you were escorting IVSers into? How did
But they were no longer IVSers. Uh-huh. They were returning volunteers, mm-hmm. and I was no longer an mm-hmm. IVSer.
Did you approach them, or did they approach
you?
No,
they kind of. They approached me.
Uh-huh.
Actually, I think. I think the Methodists were as interested in having me there, and they needed a secretary.
The Indochina Project?
No, actually, I didn't do clerical. And I talked to the Methodist ladies from St. Louis that were on their Washington tour, and did a lot of public speaking. And I didn't go out like William, or like Don and Gene did.
Don Luce and Gene Stolsis went on speaking tours.
Well, they went to where McGovern was going to be speaking. Mm-hmm. Where you know, like they spent a lot of time in New Hampshire. Mm-hmm. But yeah, they did go all over the country.
I thank you for all of your candor, and of course you are, for heaven's sakes, a professor. So we can expect good rhetoric and all of that. Exactly. And it's been a pleasure. Thank you very much.